Hey, Women of Strength, it's Megan, your host here at the VBAC Link. I am so excited, as usual, to get into our amazing episode today. But before we do, I wanted to share a review of the week from a member of our amazing community about a prenatal that I talk about often on the podcast. It's by Needed. The review reads, "I love the Needed powder that Megan advertises. Pretty reasonably priced compared to other whole food prenatals and makes me feel great. Also love that they use methylfolate instead of folic acid, which is really important to me. Women of Strength, I couldn't have said it better myself. I personally love and use Needed and recommend them to all of my VBAC and non-VBAC clients. We asked Needed for a discount code and are grateful they support VBAC moments as much as we do. Please enjoy 20% off your first purchase at thisisneeded.com. Use code VBAC20. Again, head over to thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com, code VBAC20. Hello, Women of Strength. It's Megan here. We have another VBAC story for you today, and we have our friend Jolie. Hello, Jolie.
Hey, Megan.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. How are you? I am so great. I'm excited to record your story. There was a whole bunch of little snippets, you know, through your story that I'm like, oh, I want to talk about that. But I wanted to tell everybody, I've been starting to do this. I don't know if you've been noticing, but we get a lot of emails of like, hey, where was this person located? What state was that? Like, I'm curious if it was my state so I can maybe try to find that provider. And we're going to have her providers and stuff tagged in today's post, but you're in North Georgia, correct?
Yes.
Is that where your VBAC was, or is that just where you're residing now?
Nope. This is where my VBAC was, North Georgia.
Awesome. Okay. So North Georgia people, listen to that. This will be a great story. And then I'll tell you guys a little bit more. You guys, so you're a birth worker and a photographer. Are you a doula?
Yes. Yes. Yep. I was trained as a doula in 2020, but I'm kind of exploring different ways to support people in the birth community because with three young children, I'm just trying to navigate the on-call life and doing those sorts of things. But yes, I do have experience being a doula.
Awesome. So cool. And like she said, she has three kiddos. She is a Christian wife to a biblical counselor. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
So that's awesome. And I love how you guys said that you have a vision of a multi-generational team on a mission to God's kingdom. I just love that so much. So I am so excited to record your story here in just a few seconds. I do, of course, have a review of the week, as always. We always have reviews. And just a reminder, if you haven't left a review yet, we would love them. They really do help the show. They help other women of strength find these amazing stories. And honestly, they just put a ginormous smile on my face. This review says, love these ladies and this podcast. Says, I love listening to your podcast. I listen almost every day in the car. So often that my oldest son knows you both by name. Okay, that's hilarious. It says, the stories shared here have inspired me so much. I wish I had all this information with my first baby. I've had two C-sections. I'm not pregnant at the moment and still have to get my husband on board for a third, but I'm so excited to start planning for a VBAC after two C-sections when the time comes. Thank you, Julie and Megan, for creating this amazing VBAC community. I'm so thankful for the education and support. Okay, seriously, I love, we keep hearing this. I love that other kids like know who we are because they are like so, they are so used to listening to the podcast because this is what I love even more about it, more than just they know who we are, is they're learning. Like these kids, they are sponges. We know that, right? Like they're always taking stuff in that we're saying. And, you know, if they're listening to these stories, they're learning. So hopefully, you know, if your kiddos are learning and listening, they're going to hopefully have a different outcome in their future for their future births if they so choose to,
right?
Because they're gonna know, right? They're gonna know all these stories. So anyway,
that's awesome.
That makes my heart smile. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. All right, girl, you ready? Let's do this.
All right.
All right, let's turn the time over.
Okay. So, yes, I had a home birth in November 5th. That was a home birth after two cesareans. So HVAC after two. Mm-hmm. And I'll just kind of do a small synopsis of the first two births, because I feel like that always just helps preface sort of like the background of where I'm coming from, because I think everybody's journeys to their VBAC is totally different.
Yeah, totally different. And at the same time, there's so many that are listening. They're like, oh my gosh, this is like just like me. And I think sometimes we hold on to those past experiences. Even if we've processed them, we know that that was our past. And so sometimes we even doubt ourselves because of that. And so hearing someone's story that's like pretty similar to yours and then hearing them go on to have a VBAC, I think is pretty impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. I can relate to that as well with listening to podcasts and finding those stories of women's journeys to their VBACs. And I definitely clung on to the ones where I related to. So with my first baby, our daughter, she was born in 2019. And I mean, that was like so many, that was just a typical cascade of intervention situation where I was aware of home birth and, you know, natural childbirth. And I knew that I wanted that, but I also was just young and didn't know and like wasn't aware of the resources I had is pretty much kind of what I chalked that up to was I just was just getting in, you know, to birth and eyes wide open and reading what I could, but just didn't really know what the future was going to hold for me, but didn't know what all was available to me either. And so I was, you know, sort of, I was seeing a traditional like OB group and was planning a hospital birth, but wanted just a natural childbirth, like no interventions at all, just have them in the hospital. And so I sort of just ended up getting fear-mongered, for to just put it simply out there, fear-mongered into an induction at 41 weeks. And yeah, quite frankly, it just didn't work. My body was not ready, was not open at all. And I was so determined. I stayed in that hospital working with an induction for a whole week before I had my C-section. I was trying to go slow and steady. And, you know, I kind of was going a little stir crazy there at the end of that week and obviously was confused and just downcast and so just sad about what was happening and was kind of shocked that I was there in that situation. I remember reading Ina May's book and like skipping the C-section chapter because I was like, that's not going to be me. Like, why do I need to even read this?
That's really normal. I mean, even here on the CBAC stories, I think it's very common to be like, I don't want to listen to that CBAC story because that's not going to be me, right? But at the same time, I think it's good too.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a balance with that. And so I found myself at the end of that week pushing 42 and was kind of, again, just fear within me and fear coming from my providers of just like, you've been at this for a week, you're not, you know, you're not in labor. So your options are to leave or have a C-section. And I was just like, leave. What do you, I've been here for a week. I'm not going to leave now without a baby. And so I opted for the C-section and she was fine. Like we handled that whole week together perfectly fine. There were no emergencies or sort of hiccups in the road. It was just like, all right, this is just what we do next kind of at this point. And so she was born on 42 to the day via cesarean. And yeah, I mean, that was that. It definitely, I processed the birth very traumatically. And I say that because I say processed traumatically because any trauma is how you process what's going on. So like, I know that there are births out there that could look like that and people handled them wonderfully.
Right.
And so anyways, for me, I processed it with a sense of trauma. And so I spent that sort of next year just really working through that sorrow and trauma. And I started seeing a biblical counselor, which is why I had included in my little bio that my husband is one, because I saw one, and the change that he saw in me is what kind of spurred him on and encouraged him to become one. So that was a really cool kind of like moment in our family where, you know, I was going to this wonderful woman for help and just handling my birth. And so anyways, that was really helpful for me in kind of growing and changing the way I was looking at my birth. But I was very determined to have a VBAC. My husband and I have always said, we just want however many children the Lord will give us. And so I kind of assumed that probably wouldn't be just one, and I wanted another one. And so I was very determined for a VBAC for my second pregnancy. And we conceived my second when my daughter turned one. So it was a year later. And I was just, so the way this kind of pregnancy and birth happened, which was a repeat cesarean, I kind of just put my blinders on and put my head down and was like, I just need to hire a home birth midwife and she's going to give me my VBAC. Like, that was my attitude. It was very much like, surely if I plan a home birth, like, I'm not leaving my house. Like, there's no way I'm going to end up with a C-section, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was just very, I don't know if stubborn is the right word, but there was a sense of like, I'm just covering up like all that I went through with this first birth to just like have the VBAC. Like, it was almost like that was also going to fix like the first one is kind of, I think, how I felt. In hindsight, I see that now. In the moment, I probably did not recognize that was how I was operating. So I hired a home birth midwife that came, you know, recommended to me. I knew friends that used her. And so then here we are towards the end, approaching 41 weeks, like the last time. And my water broke, like on 41 weeks. It was the first sign of labor. And I had no signs of labor with my first child. So this was so exciting. And I remember like kind of being a little scared too. Like, I was surprised. So my water broke at 41 and I contacted my midwife and whatnot. And labor kind of, I had like some little pitter patter contractions that night and then nothing the next day. And so that was on a Sunday. So my son ended up being born Thursday, that Thursday via cesarean. And so kind of what happened within that week, or, you know, a little less than a week, was not the funnest of times. I pretty much realized there at the very end, when I was kind of like needing, you know, kind of like you're here at the end, you know, you're kind of like, what's going to happen next? And I realized I hired the wrong midwife, but what do I do now?
No way.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not going to like speak ill, but you know, I believe that every care provider, like, it's not the right fit for everyone, you know? So just because I heard wonderful reviews, that's not negating the fact that she was wonderful for some people. But looking back, this is kind of pairing it with my head was just down, my blinders were on, because now I can see in hindsight red flags that were coming up. And I would always be like, oh, she was just tired. Like, maybe she just got back from a birth and that's why she seemed grumpy. Or, you know, she's been doing this for a long time, so she's just sort of like, I would just kind of give these reasons as to why she was the way she was. And it was nothing more than just a simple, like, we just didn't really click well. And she, after my water broke, she kind of took on this like fearful attitude. I was very concerned and just didn't know what to do. And just sort of really fed into fears and that I had and would plant new ones in my head. And I was just like, this is not helping. Like, what's going on? So all that to say, I think she wanted me to have a biophysical profile done since my water had broken and I was 41 and labor hadn't begun. And obviously the profile came back that there was low fluid, which I knew because my water had broken, but there was nothing else concerning with my son. But because of that report, she transferred me to the hospital. She transferred care and was just like, she called my husband after the report came back to her and just said, y'all need to go to the hospital. I'm not going to like be able to support you. And yeah, just go. And so we went, and that was that moment from the report to the hospital was kind of scary for me. But I really, on the way there, just had this peace come over me because I was going back to the hospital that my daughter was born in. And before this birth, I was very much sort of like, even just like seeing the hospital, or like, I just would like not want to look at it by the side of the road. And, you know, I had all this emotion attached to this place. And I knew a few people that worked there in the labor and delivery ward, and I had two of their numbers. And so I messaged them and I was like, is there any chance y'all are here? Like, long story short, I'm coming. Like, I don't want to be here, but I'm coming. Yeah. And they were. And I had a friend come and like, she prayed with me. And just, I had seen another nurse there that was there when I had my daughter, and she remembered me. And it was just this very healing moment in the sense of I was respected. People totally were not judging me for coming in as a home birth transfer. I was worried about that, you know, I would get sort of a side eye or, you know, judgment because I was a home birth mom, that because I was actually going to the hospital and it didn't have like a provider there. But no, they were all so very much like, we are so sorry that you are here because we know you don't want to be here, but like, we're taking care of you. We understand this is like probably hard for you to like process everything that's going on right now. So that was this healing in itself, like that healed my, I guess, my sort of emotional attachments to the hospital that were negative.
Yeah.
And anyways, that all went fine. He was fine. You know, they monitored him for a few minutes when we got there and he was fine. But they also, I did tell my husband when we were on the way, I was like, I just know it's going to be another C-section because I don't even have a doctor here. And my water's broken, and I'm already a VBAC, and so I kind of had accepted that outcome before even getting there, and decided to opt for it again. And so, the doctor there was also very respectful, and with all of that, just like the nurses were. And so he was born at 41 and 5, and he was fine. Like even though the water had been broken for some time, anyway. So that was that. And so I just, in processing that birth a little bit differently than my first, I was definitely felt like I was at a fork in the road, though, because here I am. I've just had two. I was technically a home birth transfer. Like, I was determined to get this feedback. Like, what in the world happened that time? Like, and so I just kind of realized that I had taken like any sort of trust and responsibility in the medical community or within myself, and just put it in the hands of this midwife and kind of put her up on this pedestal of like, you're going to give me the birth that I want. And just misplaced, just put all that right into the like home birth community. And so I was like, I can't do that again. But like, this is some deep internal work then. Like, if I am realizing that I am making all these other people responsible for my birth and my outcome, and it's not working out great, like, I need to figure out what the root of this is and really work on it. So that kind of began the year journey of kind of just doing some more internal work and counseling, more counseling and therapy and stuff like that. And I remember it might have been this podcast episode that I listened to, or it could have been another birth podcast, but something like, it was almost like a light bulb went off. I didn't realize I could do this, but I can't remember. I think it was your podcast, but one of y'all said, I interviewed like 7 providers before I became pregnant again to pick one out. Was that you guys or no?
Yeah. I actually interviewed 12.
Yes. Okay. I wrote that down. Yeah. I heard that and I was like, wait a minute, how am I going to do that if I'm pregnant and like scrambling to find the perfect provider? And I heard you say that and it was almost like, whoa, I didn't realize I could interview people when I'm not pregnant, but like, why couldn't I?
Right. Yeah.
And so, well, that feels
weird.
Me.
Why would you go talk to a doctor if you're not pregnant? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that gave me so much like peace and confidence. And it was like a clear path of like, oh, I'm not pregnant. Like, I've got time. And so I didn't want to like figure this all out until my son turned 1. And so I kind of was just like, okay, let me take a breath. It's like, everybody talks to you about your next baby right after you have one. And I'm always like, can we just like slow down? I just had a baby and I'm going to enjoy this time. So I waited a year, not to get pregnant the third time, but a year to like go after my provider, find my plan, like really do the deep work again. And so I did. I started interviewing all these people and I found my midwife about a little over a year before I conceived my third baby. But I found her early, like when I wasn't pregnant. And it was just such a God-ordained, perfect experience where my husband and I went and had a conversation with her. And she just aligned with, on a biological level, on a spiritual level. That was something I didn't realize, how important it was going to be to me to find a fellow Christian who really walked out their life with the Lord. And she did. And I developed a close friendship with her actually even before I was pregnant. And with being in the birth world, you know, I would kind of work with her, and I had attended some births with her before I became pregnant. And so I saw her live it out, and I knew she was just like amazing. And what's so funny, just the way the mind and body and spirit are connected, was when I first met her and did the interview with my husband, I hadn't started my cycle back. I was telling her, like, I'm just looking, like, I need a VBAC. I want another VBAC or want a VBAC. And I'm not pregnant yet, but I haven't started my cycle either. So like, I have no idea when. And the very next day I got my period. And it was like, for me, I felt like it was my body like coming into alignment with the fact that I just found somebody who was going to be amazing for my birth.
You're ready.
Mm-hmm. And it was so, I emailed her. I was like, this is so weird, but like, I literally just started my cycle. And anyways, that was just a really cool moment, I think, for me to recognize that connection. And so that was, yeah. So that was when I found my midwife. And that was such a key part, I think, to my VBAC. So then I wasn't, you know, it was about a year later when I got pregnant with my third and hired her and was just like so excited. And so, okay. So one of my big things with interviewing people for my third was, okay, I have had two cesareans, and historically I have gone post dates with both of them. So mm-hmm. I need to know what your deal is with due dates and, you know, the whole let me language and all of that. I was trying to figure out what I aligned with in that regard and what they would support me with. So here I am, you know, approaching 42 weeks. And so she was very much like, whatever, like we'll check on you more when you're past your due date if you want. And we'll obviously keep, you know, take care of you, but there, I have no like cutoff or whatever.
I'm going to take a quick break from our episode and continue talking about our favorite prenatal line, Needed. Needed was created by two mothers and trained nutritionists who knew a better way of nurturing our bodies was needed. Nutrition is so important and has the power to change outcomes for both mamas and babies during conception, pregnancy, and beyond. They found that 95% of women in the prenatal stages have nutrient deficiencies. Most prenatal vitamins include the bare minimum nutrition based on outdated guidelines and stale research. Needed is different. They have done years of research to find out what we really need during our journeys and have done exactly that. Their products are third-party tested, backed by clinical insights from over 4,000 practitioners, and they are so thoughtful about every ingredient, using exactly what's needed in the bioavailable forms. And this is important because you and your baby deserve the best. Don't be one of the 95% of women who are not getting what they truly need in a prenatal vitamin. Consider taking or even switching to Needed and feel confident that you will be receiving radically better nutrition. As I mentioned earlier, we asked Needed for a discount code and are grateful they support our VBAC mamas as much as we do. Please enjoy 20% off your first purchase at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. Again, that is thisisneeded.com to get 20% off with code VBAC20.
Yeah, so I was 42 weeks and I started losing a little bit of mucus plug. So that was exciting. But then another pretty much week went by. And here I am a couple days before 43. And I have like two nights of sort of prodromal labor, where the contractions would kind of wake me up in the night, but then I would kind of go back into sleep. So that was the first night, like on the Thursday night, I had those contractions, and Friday, you know, rolls around. And I mean, I'm so pregnant and so tired, and just like, it was definitely emotionally very challenging that last month. But so then Friday night comes around and they pick up again. And that night they were like, I really couldn't sleep. And so I would kind of be on the birth ball. I would get in the bathtub, and yeah, I knew I was going to need some support on Saturday because of my other children. And so it did fizzle out Saturday morning, but I had a friend come and like play with my kids, and we just kind of all hung out together on Saturday. But I did have some like contractions that were strong, like every 30 minutes to an hour during the day on Saturday. And so I was pretty much, yeah. So that Saturday I was 43 weeks, I think either Saturday or Friday, I was 43 weeks. And so that evening started picking up a little bit more. And my birth team, so my midwife and her assistant is who was going to come to the birth, and then my husband. And so they came over around 10:30 Saturday night. And then 30 minutes later, so they got to my house at 10:30 around 11 p.m. So my kids were asleep, so that was fine. And I wasn't really sure if I was going to have them around or not. I was going to kind of play it by ear because I just wasn't sure what kind of support I would need from my husband and how they were going to handle that. And so through the night, they slept, which was great. And I was laboring that Saturday night. My water broke at 11 p.m. Saturday night, 30 minutes after my birth team got there. And you know, that was something that I was having to really kind of work with in my mind because of the second birth, having my water break as the first sign of labor and then not have the baby for several days. I was really wanting to like not have my water break early. And
yeah,
but my water breaking actually, when it broke at 11, I mean, I was in labor before then. So that was a different situation. And I just had like this wave of peace come over me again because I knew I was finally in labor and my birth team was going to stay. It wasn't going to be like a, oh, never mind, we're going to go home now. Like they were here and the water was clear and I just like, I had no worries. And so I was actually really excited after my water broke because I thought I wasn't going to be because of my second birth, but I was so thankful. And pretty much from there on, it started picking up pretty intensely and the nighttime was a blur. I just did, you know, like squats and walked around and swayed and just like clung to door frames, I feel like, and was just sort of, yeah, I definitely struggled with like holding tension in my body, like in the contractions, but I did labor pretty much all night on Saturday. And then later in the night, maybe around like 4 or 5 a.m., I finally found like a great place to relax and like just a position. And it was actually just laying in the bed, like reclined is what did it for me. I was able to like melt into the contractions and I could tell that I was like opening and progressing. And so I just kind of slept around like four or five to like 7 a.m. So moving into Sunday morning now, was definitely still laboring intensely, but was like sleeping. Like to somebody on the outside, you would just think, oh, she's just like taking a nap. But I was really like in transition actually. And so I did not think I would want like a cervical exam because of my previous two births, like never dilating, all of that. You know, I had to move past that whole like belief that my body was not going to open and things like that. So I wasn't sure how I was going to do with like exams and stuff. But at that time, being a doula and, you know, hearing so many birth stories and I was already pregnant for so long, I was just like, I need to know if I have like a whole nother day of this, like I don't want to hear a number, but I want her to check me and at least tell me, like, does my energy need to be like, okay, hunker down, conserve, like you're not that far. Or is it like, okay, let's pick it up. Like you're almost there. So I did want her to check me, but I didn't want to hear a number. And I just kind of wanted her to give me like a general frame of like, here's where you need to be at in your headspace with the information I've just received. So it was like 7 a.m. maybe. She checked me. She was like, are you sure you don't want to hear a number? And so I could just tell the way she asked that question. I was like, okay, she knows I'm going to like the number I hear. Like, okay, go ahead and tell me. She was like, you're an 8 and I can like stretch you completely open very easily. And I was like, what? Like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Okay. So she was like, I think all it's going to take is some different positions and kind of do like a circuit to get the baby's head lined up just a little bit more straight. And that will open you up all the way. Like if we just kind of move the baby just a little bit. It's like, okay, let's do it. So I did like two circuits of excruciating positions. Side lying was not the most fun thing I've ever done. But I was very much just like, tell me what to do and I'll do it. And so we did sort of like side lying, knees to chest, and like dip the hip where I was kind of like standing and I would kind of squat and they would like turn. That just, I don't know how to explain the sensation, but it was like, I don't know, maybe probably just the baby moving like through my pelvis. It was pretty intense. And so I did like two circuits of that. And I was just like, I need to feel some comfort again and like not do this circuit again. So I was like, I think I want to get in the birth pool. And I had a birth pool set up and had actually tried to get in earlier in labor, but like got right back out. It was just not for me. I don't know why. I was like, maybe I'll try the birth pool. And I stepped in and was just like, nope, I don't want to do that. So the second time now, this was around 11:30 a.m. I was like, I think I want to get in the pool. And I got in and I was like, I'm not like 100% sure, but I think I feel pushy. And it was just one of those things that, you know, in a lot of ways, I felt like a first time mom having this, going through this labor, where I never had a pushing phase with the others. And so I was just sort of doubting myself a little bit, but the assistant was like, well, we can't tell you if you feel pushy. I was like, okay, I know.
We can't tell you.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
And so I was like, okay, well, I'll just like kind of be in this for a few more contractions and see like if this whatever sensation I'm feeling, if it kind of stays or gets stronger, I think I'll be confident that I am like ready to push, or if it changes, then like, you know, whatever. I just like was trying to figure out again, like where I needed to be. And so I did feel that pushing sensation and started to in the water. And that was definitely like such a switch in the way I was experiencing the sensation of labor, because the contractions were like painful to me. But when I started pushing, it was like relief and very like relieving. And I felt like, oh, I'm doing something. Like, this is different. I'm not just like getting through this. I'm like moving through it in a way where like I have like this sort of control, it felt like, over it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed pushing, and I was in the tub and again, reclining on my back. I never thought I would be in this position for birth, because it's usually not the one, like it is sort of like the hospital stereotype of on your back on the bed. But that was where I felt relief and got through transition, was on my back in the bed. And so in the birth pool, that's actually how I pushed, was kind of reclined back. And I was just, I don't know, I was just able to do it and that better that way. I had like 5 minutes between each contraction. So that was really nice, because I ended up pushing for about 2 hours. And that's kind of a long time, especially if I think from start to finish, my labor was 15 hours. So those last two, I never felt like exhausted as in like, oh, I can't do this. But I do remember, like, I wasn't really aware of the time. I knew it was Sunday afternoon. I got into the pool at 11:30 and my son was born at like 2:05. So I was pushing, but I had those 5 minutes of breaks. And so I was able to just kind of doze off and float in the water. Like, it was, I genuinely enjoyed those 2 hours. Like, it was just peaceful. But I felt myself getting sort of impatient, because I didn't know what time it was, but I was just like, okay, the water's kind of cool. And like, I know I've been in here for a while, so I don't know, just like, I really kind of wish this is over now. And so finally there came a moment where, you know, I saw my midwife getting baby stuff together, and I was just like, oh, like, what are you doing? You know, she's like, you're like pushing, like I'm getting the baby stuff out. Like, you're doing this, like it's actually happening. And I was just like, oh wow. Like, okay, I guess so. It was so funny. Like, I don't know. I think there was just this part of like, I was so zoned in to what I was doing, what I was feeling, that I wasn't really like processing it. Like, oh, this is happening. And then she told me I could feel my baby's head. And that was mind blowing. Once I reached down and felt his head, which we didn't know he was a boy, but at the time we were waiting to find out, that definitely kind of brought me into a sense of reality when I could feel the baby's head, and was just like, whoa, okay, this is happening. And just like a slight burn when his head crowned, but there was so much adrenaline when his body was coming out that like I don't even really recall that being painful, just kind of a burning sensation. His head crowned. I kind of changed positions after his head was born. I was still in the water, but I think I was still kind of on my back, so I kind of moved up a little bit onto my hands and knees and stayed in the water. And my midwife ended up sort of guiding his head and shoulder down, and then his body came out and she handed him to me. And I remember just knowing it was a boy, even though I hadn't seen yet. But I leaned back in the tub and I think what I said was just like, I've never held one of my babies after they were born before. Like that feeling of just like an immediate, like my baby came out and they're in my arms. Like that was just so surreal, but at the same time, almost like it was so seamless and intuitive that I was just like, okay, I just gave birth and it's just a normal day. Like everybody around me, like there was this, I think I had thought, you know, kind of built it up in my mind to be this incredible experience, which it was. I don't want to like say, I wasn't all that. But in a way, like, birth is so natural and normal that after it happened, it was just like, I'm in my bed and I, you know, the birds are chirping outside and like the day is going on. Like, where before, you know, I was in the hospital and just felt like this whole like different world. And so it was kind of interesting how there was an element that was sort of like mundane about it. But I liked that. I mean, it was, I don't know, it was just the normalcy of it all kind of shocked me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, I really actually can totally relate, because I remember after I had my VBAC after 2 C-section baby, I was at a birth center. I was in the bathroom on the floor when I gave birth, and they were like, all right, let's get you up and move you to the room. And I was like, okay. And I just remember like going in there and like laying down and starting to feed my baby and just like looking around almost like, did that really just happen? But at the same time, it's like, yeah, it just happened. And now I'm just feeding my baby. Like, it's like, that's,
yeah, it was like, normal. That was it.
Like, it was just so weird. It was like so weird. It was like, there was a slight disconnect in my brain that what had just transpired, you know, like what happened?
Yes.
And so, yeah, so I really can relate to that so much. And then kind of even how you were saying, like, you know, I was pushing for a really long time, and then I just like looked over and was like realizing that my midwife was like putting baby stuff together and getting stuff ready. And you were like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I had that moment too, where I was just like laboring on the toilet. And then all of a sudden my midwife was just like coming in here and like guiding me to the stool. And I was like, wait, what? She's like, let's come have a baby. I'm like, what? What, really? Like, it was like, I couldn't believe that what was happening was happening. And, but I was like so zoned into like doing this birth, having, you know, having this feedback. And then all of a sudden I realized I was doing that, like actually doing
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I think when you have C-sections and when you have like any sort of like difficulties in your births, your mind clings on to those phrases that people say, like, oh, your baby's too big, you know, you're not going to open. And almost, it makes it feel like this like miraculous thing must happen for me to give birth because it didn't work the other times.
Yes.
So how in the world, like, trumpets need to be blaring and like, you know, some like crazy thing has to happen for this to work, but it doesn't. And it was just sort of like, oh, that was
normal.
It. The thing that didn't feel normal was actually the surgical births, but the thing that felt normal was the VBAC. And so it was very interesting. But after he came out, they were like, that's a big baby. And he pooped twice before we got out of the tub, like pretty big poops. And so then by the time my midwife weighed him, you know, she knew that he had already pooped, but I think he weighed 10-14. And so she was like, he totally was 11 pounds coming out, like before, if I'd weighed him before he took those like ginormous poops. And so that was shocking and not expected at all. So that was really cool that that wasn't even like a part of it, because I didn't get any late term ultrasounds. Now, looking back, people definitely kept asking me if I was having twins. They were, you know, like, wow, you look really big. And I just was like, ha ha, I get it. I'm pregnant. Like, just, you know, the things people say sort of thing.
Like,
but
duh.
Now I'm like, oh, maybe I actually did look larger than normal, because this child could pass for two babies as twins. And yeah, so he was almost 11 pounds. And I did have one tear that I chose to not, for her to not suture. But that was it. That was the birth.
Wow, that's surprise big baby. Like, think about, you know, there's a lot of the times in the provider's world of, you know, the hospital world, where they see someone that's like larger maybe, and they're wanting to do those third trimester ultrasounds and growth scans, and they're like, what? You know, when really you didn't need any of those things. You just needed time and a 43-week baby, right? Like,
yeah.
I had a doula client, one of my beginning doula clients, and she was a 43-week one day as well. And I mean, it was a 10-pound baby as well. It was like 10, 12, I think. And that girl just like powerhouse that baby out. But she was facing pressure to get induced at 39 weeks. And was feeling all that pressure. Oh, your baby's looking big. You look so big. You're small. I don't know if this is going to be possible. And then she switched I think it was at like 41 weeks she switched and then went to 43
Wow.
and one, and just had a beautiful vaginal birth. So I love that. Okay, so there are so many things. Something that I caught in your story was with your second midwife, or with your second provider, mm-hmm. to your baby. How you're like, everyone said like this midwife, so you just went with that midwife. And then obviously you realize like, well, this wasn't the midwife for me. And I think that is something that it's important to note, especially when we have our supportive provider list, right? It's like we have this list and we're providing these names where people will rant and rave for days and days and days about some of these providers. And so you're like, yeah, great. Like they're saying the supportive, or, you know, the whole community is going to this provider or whatever. And then mm-hmm. you're in that situation and you just take that word for it. But then you get into that situation of birthing and you're realizing like, oh crap, this isn't right. And there were red flags and I didn't recognize them because I was just going off what everybody else said. And so I think it's important to note that even though people or whoever might say this provider is the only provider and the best provider, that doesn't mean that they're the best provider for you. And so it really mm-hmm. comes back down to what is that provider looking like for you in your mind? Close your eyes, envision your birth, think about what they're saying, what they're doing, how they are caring for you. Think about the questions you want to ask them and go and really ask these people these questions that are really something for you. And I love that you've talked about that with your third midwife. How you're like, these are the things I was looking, these qualities. And it mm-hmm. took you a while to find it, but you found it. And I love also that you pointed out, really, you guys, I can't say it enough. Finding a provider when you are not pregnant is night and day from finding a provider when you are.
Yeah, there was no pressure. I felt like I could be so much more confident in saying no because I didn't feel like I had to say yes.
Yeah. And honestly, it's just our minds are in a different space. And even Dr. Fox, mm-hmm. A few episodes back, he even talked about that, like how that is a really great thing to do because we're emotional. We feel pressure. There's time, you know, our baby's growing and each week matters to find that provider. And it's just, it's a very different thing. It's just a very different thing. Okay. And then in your form, we talked about this a little bit before, but you talked about radical responsibility. And the word radical just stands out to me now because of our radical acceptance episodes that Julie and I have done. Mm-hmm. We did two of them. So if you guys haven't listened to those, go back and listen. There's a part one and a part two. But how would you describe like radical responsibility to, or finding radical responsibility to our audience?
Yeah. So I think that it comes with a lot of just, you have to come face to face to like some core beliefs, I think, because for me, what I was realizing was, you know, we all say it like, you are the one that cares the most about your baby and your body. Okay. Like, I think most people can agree that's true. But then how do you actually walk that out when you're pregnant? Because what can happen is you can be like subconsciously deciding that this person over here is going to make sure I'm safe, is going to make sure my baby is safe, is going to do all these things for me. When in reality, I believe that nobody outside of you can guarantee that safety. And right. As a Christian, I believe that I don't even hold the keys to life and death. Like if that's what we're going to talk about, you know, at the core of all of this stuff, people, and when they're pregnant, you know, you want your baby after you're born. And that's a thing. And so like, that's kind of, you know, your basic line. And so I had to kind of come to grips with even just the reality at its deepest core of, okay, so if I'm pregnant and I have this baby growing inside of me and I want a birth this way for these reasons, I need to own this. Like I need to, if my midwife recommends, you know, I eat this way or do these things, she's at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to actually do it. She's not going to come over and feed me. Like she's not going to text me every day and ask if I took my supplements or went on a walk. And that kind of goes into something else that I would like to mention if we have time, of just like handling all the things with birth. But with the responsibility aspect, I just, I don't know. It's kind of hard to pin down, but I think that it just boils down to like realizing like what kind of where do you have control and where do you not have control? And are you giving any control to someone else? Or are they just there to support you? Because there was an element to where I was at where I wasn't wanting to do like a free birth, which I know that there's very strong opinions, you know, for that or unassisted, you know, different terms, all those things. Mm-hmm. But I did glean a lot from some books I was reading about like unassisted birth because I wanted to feel like I could make decisions with my midwife's support, not like the other way around. It wasn't like her making the decision and making sure I was on board with it. It was more so like, this is what I want to do. And like, I'm going to work with you because I did hire you. And I actually hired you more for the essence of like womanly support because midwife means with women. And so I wanted this relationship I'd cultivated with my midwife was more of like a sisterhood friendship where I was like, I need you with me in my birth. And like, I hired you because you have incredible skills. And I know that you can use these skills if something arises where we need to do something different in my birth. But more than that, I know that like, you know that like, you're not responsible for certain things and I'm not responsible for certain things, but we're working together and you're there for me on an emotional level. And that was more important to me. And
I love that.
Not everybody's going to be there in their birth, and that's okay. But I think like if you're listening and that resonates with you in the sense of like, oh, I've taken some power and put it in other people, or I am in my mind holding my providers responsible for, you know, XYZ at the end of the day, I would just kind of work through that and like face those kind of thoughts and beliefs and see like if you think that there needs to be sort of like a change in your kind of perception on responsibility and what we control and what we don't control, what we have to like surrender, which is incredibly difficult.
Yes, it is. But I love that you're talking about that. And we have to walk in and we have to own it, but we have to also work together. And I like how you said, I don't want her to have to like convince me of this. I want to like know what I'm talking about and work with her with this situation. And a lot of times we have to do that with providers where we need to come in and work together and not be like patient versus provider. It just needs to be a collaboration. But at the same time, we have to take ownership into everything that we can. Okay, so we talked about, you were talking about this, and then you mentioned you wanted to talk about all the things, right? So we talked about like getting enough food, making sure our supplements, we get the right supplements, which we know here at the Feedback Link, I'm very passionate about getting the right supplements. And then finding the right provider and figuring out what to do with the kids. And I mean, there's so many things.
Yeah.
Right? So you want
there's
to talk
so many
about
things.
That.
Yeah, I can talk about that for a minute because I think there's so many things that you can obsess over or shut down over. And so one of the things of just like, this kind of goes into like, I guess my tips for like, if you're going for a VBAC, here's some tips. So a holistic approach. When I say holistic, I mean like body, mind, and spirit. So a lot of things we can do for our bodies when we're pregnant, you know, the nutrition, the walks, the exercises, the spinning babies gymnastics, like, you know, all of these like body focused things, but you also need to be working on your mind and how you are, you know, doing in your mind, which that was huge for me. And I found a birth course and worked with this incredible group of people. They're called Mind Change, but anyways, her birth course, which I think I sent you, is called Transforming Birth. And it's all about subconscious stuff and like rewiring your brain to have different pathways for your birth. And so anyways, that's kind of my little plug for that. But going into preparing your mind for birth, like actually think about what you do want and not what you don't want. And think about what you don't want for, you know, have a plan. You know, if you need to have a plan with your provider, of course, that's like responsible. But then put that away and like spend the time, like the real time, like sitting in and like immersing yourself in like what you want it to look like. And then just your spirit. So you can make a whole list of all the things you need to do. But the key is in how you approach it. Because I remember in one of my previous births, one of them that was a C-section, somebody had said one time, it might have been just like on social media, like, oh, I went to the chiropractor every week for my birth and I got this wonderful fast labor and I know it was because of the chiropractor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, I went to the chiropractor every week. Why didn't I have a VBAC? Like, or, you know, that was my first, I think. Why didn't I have a vaginal birth? And so it's not in the things. Like, that's kind of my main point, which is so simple. And you might be hearing that and be like, well, duh. But it's the how you approach them. Because going to the chiropractor regularly is great for your health. But if you are doing it from a place of stress and control, and like, if I miss an appointment or if I don't get 3 miles today, then actually that's like not helping you anymore. And you should probably not do that. Like, not go on that walk. If you're feeling stressed out about having to go on the walk, don't do it. And like, approach it from a place of peace and joy and like acceptance, going back to your, you know, radical acceptance. And so all the things that can help you in your pregnancy are wonderful, but don't like take them one at a time and make sure that when you're like going on your walk, when you have your supplements laid out, you're taking them from a place of peace and acceptance, and then it can be helpful for you. And one of the, I'll just share one small example of how I did this with my third pregnancy, that I didn't really have this frame of mind for my previous two, where there was a certain supplement, I can't remember what it was called. It was a supplement that was like, it was a combination of herbs that helped ripen your cervix. And a lot of people recommend VBACs at the end. It wasn't birth prep. It was something like 5 weeks or something. It has something to do with like 5 or 7. There's like a number in it.
Okay.
And it's like a holistic supplement that has, you know, supportive herbs in it for, you know, ripening your cervix. And so I remember coming across this information while I was pregnant and just thinking, okay, I looked it up. It was like all sold out online. And I was like, I feel like in my mind, I'm thinking I have to take this to get the VBAC. And like, this is going to be like, this is going to help me. And if I don't like get it, then like, what's going to happen? And so I ended up talking to my midwife about it, and she actually had some. She was like, oh yeah, I do love this supplement. And I have some, you know, they're all sold out right now. And I said, okay, I'll take it, but I'm going to let you know if I'm going to start taking it. And please ask me if I'm taking it out of a stressful, controlling way, or if I'm taking it from a place of peace, because depending on the way I answer, like, I need accountability to not actually do it, because I wanted to be able to receive it in a way of like, this is just supportive in general. That's what she told me. She's like, it's not going to hurt you. Like, they're wonderful herbs that will just strengthen and tone your uterus. So like, you can take it. But I knew I needed to be in a frame of mind where it wasn't like, this is going to be the thing. So that was just a small example of how I sort of like embodied that reality of like, if this thing is going to stress me out, even if it's a good thing, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Love that so much, because I see so many times just within the community of our own community and other communities where it's like, you guys, I have 5 days to get this baby out, or they're going to make me have a C-section. And so then we have this like stressful reaction to do anything we can to get that baby out. And actually what it's doing is creating more stress in our body, which is not going to help our cervix, right? So I kind of love that message. I do not know what you're talking about exactly, like what they used, but I mean, herbs are great, but I love that. Do things with intent, like with purpose, and not because of, don't do things out of fear or out of worry or out of pressure. Do things because you think they're right, because you think this is what you need to be doing, not because you're stressed about something. So
yeah,
I'm going to just leave that right there, because I love that message so much. Thank you so much again for sharing your stories, and congrats on your HVAC after 2 seasons.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.